And well, good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show, and it is Wednesday, July 6th. Kind of a little bit of a cloudy day, and I'm Susie Prez, one of your co-hosts. And good morning, Chris.
Hi, Susie. I'm Chris Bester, your co-host. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Nice and bright and early here. We have some great guests in the studio. We have a couple of different things going on this morning.
We're
going
to be talking about.
We'll talk about that. But do you want to introduce our guests and then we'll hear the weather?
Yes, we're going to be talking about the proposed Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. We have with us this morning Phil Huff. He's the executive director of the Friends of Scotchman Peak. Also, we have Bonner County Commission Chair Carrie Kelly and Bob Bay, who is Vice President of Government Affairs for the Idaho Forest Group. Thank you, three gentlemen, for coming in. We're going to swing back and dig into a recent trip that you took to Washington, D.C. to work on behalf of the proposed wilderness and have some other questions as well. And a little bit later in the show, Susie, we're going to have a second guest.
Yep, we're going to have Gene Girth will be here to talk about a new group that's forming in Sandpoint. It's called 350sandpoint.org. It's kind of I think of it as a coalition of information gathering and people coming together with ideas about our environment and what's going on with climate change.
Yeah, specifically climate change,
mm-hmm,
yes.
Exactly.
350 is a trigger point in how they're measuring carbon in the atmosphere.
Right.
And Gene will fill us in on that.
Yeah, we have a couple events coming up this week.
Oh, a very busy week in Sandpoint, as usual, our hometown here. We're having on this weekend, we have the Sandpoint Beer Fest. Everybody likes to drink beer, right? That's on Saturday. And as well, on Friday through Sunday is the Wooden Boat Show, or formerly called the Classic and Antique Boat Festival. And there's also a big event going on out in the Sagal Area Summerfest, which is a whole bunch of different bands that are playing.
It's put on by the Eureka Institute.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's a ton of other music going on around town, other events. If we have some time later in the show, we'll come back and talk about the community calendar.
And speaking of community calendar, you can always find out what's going on. There's about 20 different ways. One of them is Sandpoint Online and also krfy.org on our events page.
Yeah, on our events calendar pages, mm-hmm, yes. And we have, mm-hmm, both entertainment events and civic events and sporting events and movies that are showing. So if you need to know what's going on around town, definitely go online and you can get all the details. More than we can rattle off in an hour.
That's right. So how about the weather?
Yes. What's
You're
going
looking
on
forward
with the weather? I detected rain.
I know. There was drops on my car this morning, so something happened overnight.
Oh, it actually rained real hard up a little bit west of town.
Oh, okay.
About 1 o'clock.
I must have gotten just a little bit of that. Currently, it's 64 degrees from the National Weather Service. We can expect today a 60% chance of showers, then a 50% chance of thunderstorms, and with a high of 67. Low tonight is 48. Slight chance of thunderstorms, about 20%, and then partly cloudy. Tomorrow, Thursday, increasing clouds, high of 78. And Thursday night, 60% of showers, low of 53. And it just kind of goes on. It looks like Saturday it's about 80% chance of showers. And I think next week it's going to
Yeah, it's cool and wet for
change.
The weekend. But, mm-hmm, you know what? As we learned last year, too, mm-hmm, much hot weather can be pretty disastrous around here.
I know my garden's enjoying the moisture when it happens. It just goes boom, mm-hmm, afterwards. So,
also going on outside, the sunrise this morning was at 4:53 a.m. It'll set tonight at 8:48 p.m. We're having these wonderful long days. Up in the heavens, the first quarter moon is coming Monday, so the moon is getting larger right now. And on the lake level is at 2062.24 feet. It's going to hold right about that level. That's the full pool level. Did want to mention that there was an alert out earlier, a few days ago, that there a log boom at the Driftwood Yard was breached, and it let some driftwood, some logs out that are creating navigation hazards for boaters. Do be alert for floating logs in the lake if you're out boating. That means if you're up at high speed and you hit a log, some of these logs are foot diameter, 10 feet or so longer, and about 20 or 30 of those were released. So use some caution if you're out boating.
Definitely.
And with that, Susie, what else? Anything else we should mention before we get into our feature interview?
I think we just should get into this. This is an important subject. I'm very impressed with the fact that this group of fellas and caring people went to Washington, D.C., and I want to hear all about it.
Okay. So, again, we're in the studio this morning with Phil Huff, Executive Director of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. Phil, say hi.
Good morning, Chris and Susie.
As well, we're with Bob Bay. He's Vice President of Government Affairs for the Idaho Forest Group.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Bob, thanks for coming in. And our Bonner County Commission Chair, Carrie Kelly.
Yes, good morning. Glad to be here.
Thank you again for coming in. So I thought, Phil, let's turn to you first. Let's not assume every listener out there is aware of what we're talking about here when we're saying that there's a proposed wilderness for Scotchman Peaks. Tell us a little bit more about what's proposed here.
Sure. The Scotchman Peaks roadless area, which sits on the Idaho-Montana border just north and east of Lake Ponderay, is an 88,000-acre roadless area that's been managed by the Forest Service in its core, about 64,000 acres, as proposed or recommended wilderness since the first forest plans came out in 1987. About a year and a half ago, revised land management plans continue to recommend wilderness, but it takes an act of Congress to actually designate and bring those areas into the National Wilderness Preservation System. The Friends formed in 2005 dedicated to the proposition that the best use of the Scotchman Peaks would be as wilderness. We're also involved in the forest plans and other land management planning activities across the remaining 2 million acres of the Idaho Panhandle Forest and 2 million acres of the Kootenai Forest. We believe that there's valid reasons to have multiple uses across those landscapes. But in the case of the Scotchman's, the best use is as wilderness.
Okay. And so you mentioned it takes an act of Congress to make wilderness. Describe the process a little bit. And then I know that all three of you gentlemen went to Washington, D.C. to work on behalf of this. So bring us up to speed.
So when Congress passed the Wilderness Act in 1964, they immediately created a fairly small wilderness preservation system. But they also wrote into that law a method by which areas could be added, and they envisioned that the areas would be added, and actually directed the agencies, the four land management agencies of the federal government, the Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Refuge System, and the park system, to inventory their lands and make recommendations. But then the law reserved to Congress, not the administration, the right to make decisions on which areas would be included. So what's not written into the law, but in the real world politic is important to most decisions that Congress makes, is local support, support from constituents. And particularly in the case of land management activities, the senators and congressmen look to the local officials, city officials, county officials, business people, civic groups to weigh in on any land management matters. So in the case of wilderness, it's very important that there's a broad coalition of public support. So the Friends have been working on having conversations with a variety of stakeholders, local organizations and groups over the last 12 years. And increasingly, we've found that there's broad and diverse support for the idea that the area should be wilderness.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of that support, gaining support, Bob, you're with Idaho Forest Group, and you have more than one sawmill, right?
Yes, we have five sawmills in northern Idaho.
Right. So why is Idaho Forest Group supporting this?
Okay, we began working with Phil and the Friends probably about 5 years ago, and Phil came to us and said they were looking at this area for wilderness, and so we said we'll work with you, but we need sort of a blueprint for progress. How do we move forward? And we said if you can get the local community support, you can get the county commissioners on board, and then you can show us that it doesn't have an adverse impact on the timber industry in our area, then we'll be supportive of the wilderness. So through the Panhandle Forest Collaborative, Phil's been working with us to increase the active management on the suitable timber base of the Idaho Panhandle Forest, and we've actually increased the harvest on the Panhandle from 28 million board feet to a little over 50 million board feet. So Phil has held up his end of the bargain. He got everybody on board. He's helped us get some active management of timberlands. So now the onus is on us to say, okay, we have to support Phil because we said we would. So, so we went back to Washington, D.C. to let our elected officials know that this 14,000 acres, we don't need it to supply timber to supply our mills. We need the 900,000 acres of suitable timber base on the panhandle actively managed. And Phil's helping us with that. So we think it's good for the community, and the county commissioners are on board. So that's, we also agree with Phil that the highest and best use of that land is for wilderness.
Carrie Kelly, how about the same question to you? Well, you know, I know the county commissioners have acted, passed a resolution in support, I believe. Why is the county supporting this?
Well, it goes back before the present board that we have now. It's really had support for probably the last 10 or 12 years. My role in this was actually to talk to our elected representatives back in Washington and assure them that this was something that was really popular in Bonner County. The commissioners supported it. All the municipalities supported it here. There was really no opposition to it, and the timing was right. Now, when you look at the political landscape, having more federal regulations is not something that most of our representatives would support. So our position and mine, and I think the other commissioners, that this is kind of the exception to the rule, where this is such a perfect place, and as said here, the best use of the land is to make it wilderness. The big difference going forward is the fact that it makes it permanent. The restrictions that are on the land now really wouldn't change. They're there. It's being managed as wilderness, but it makes it permanent. And so I support it. The commissioners-elect support it. When I was running for office 4 years ago, it was part of my campaign. I knew Phil before that. I had climbed Scotchman's Peak a couple of times. So I had some connection to it, but that's kind of why I was back in Washington to let the officials know that, you know, as a county representative, elected official like they are, this is something that was supported here. Mm-hmm.
Phil, I guess this one would be to you. So how much does having the designation really change the use there? I mean, it occurs to me that one thing that it does, Bonner County has no declared wilderness in it right now, and it adds to the tourism product. So there's probably an economic benefit there. But does making it wilderness, is that going to increase the use there?
So the designation of wilderness won't change anything that is happening in terms of management. It'll simply make it permanent. The idea of increased usage is possible, although with the advocacy that we've been doing and the awareness we've been doing around the area, we've seen some increased usage of the namesake trail, the Scotchman Peak Trail itself. The other trails in the area in dispersed use, very minimal change to date. If it becomes a wilderness, when it becomes a wilderness, it will add to the general psyche of the area that can draw tourists, but also creates the kind of connections to the landscape that people who live here cherish. So when we look at what are the economic drivers of small towns across the West, it's often a direct link between accessibility to protected public lands, whether they're national parks or wilderness areas, and the growth in economies that come from people who are either telecommuting, light manufacturing. You had companies like Coldwater Creek, Cochava Quest that establish here and grow here because the owners want to be in our area. And that connections to the lake, to the mountains, to Mount Schweitzer, to places like the proposed Scotchman Peaks Wilderness.
It's a quality of life matter that it becomes an asset for companies that are recruiting employees.
So yeah. Economically, the benefits exist beyond tourism into the general business perceptions of the area. This is one of the reasons that the Chamber of Commerce about a year and a half ago signed on to a letter of support asking for the delegation to take action to designate the area as wilderness. Mm-hmm.
So we get all this support. I mean, it's a kind of a rare instance of a pretty much a consensus, but there must be some opposition. What would be the opponent's points on this opposing wilderness designation?
There's no organized opposition groups, and I occasionally come across or will read in the newspaper of a small handful of people whose general predisposition to anything that has to do with the federal government is negative. And so there are some, if you will, knee-jerk people anti-federal government who are opposed to wilderness.
Yeah. Well, it's already federal land, though, right?
It is. Yeah, I mean, so nothing nothing changes.
Yeah.
I think there's this is a question for Kerry perhaps to weigh in on too in his time with the commission and feedback that he's gotten since the commissioners took their resolution about a year ago.
Oh, well, I think the only criticism I got at all was people thought, and again, we get back to the one trail that goes up to the top of Scotchman's Peak, was the fact that it would become too popular, too many people would be there, take away a little bit of the feeling of wilderness on that one trail. And I said, well, you know, that could happen. It could become very popular. But that's only one small portion of this whole area. And I think his concern was that he liked to go up there by himself and the trail would be more populated. So mm-hmm. So that is a little bit of a concern, but it's a huge area and you mm-hmm. get in the back of it. I mean, there are areas that, I tell you what, you're not going to run into anybody except
yeah,
Phil.
Yeah.
You might run into yeah. Phil. But.
And the Scotchman's Peak Trail, of course, is one of the classic hikes here. It's a pretty strenuous hike, though, because there's a lot of elevation gain. But you get to the top, and the views are gorgeous. Phil, how many other trails are there?
We have about a dozen other named trails in the proposed wilderness. And then there are some areas where there aren't trails per se, but there's some wonderful backcountry hiking. And on the subject of the Scotchman's Peak Trailhead, our organization over the last year has been working to reroute the lower mile to make it not necessarily easy, but less difficult.
Yeah, okay. One point of conflict that occurs to me is the question of motorized access, since that seems to be an issue. Is very much of this area suitable even for motorized access?
So, motorized access, which can be an issue with some wilderness areas in the case of the Scotchman Peaks, is not an issue as the trails don't lend themselves to motorized use and they're prohibited right now because of it being recommended wilderness.
Yeah.
So this 88,000 acres that is the proposed Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, it's rugged. And that's what you're saying. It's not accessible. The trails probably won't get overcrowded because there's many trails. Who maintains this area? What is it currently designated as?
So it's currently managed as recommended wilderness. And the Forest Service manages it as the land management agency. The Wildlife Management Agency, Idaho Fish and Game, manages the wildlife, and we support both organizations in multiple ways, but mainly providing volunteers to do those things that are needed to make good management decisions in the case of collecting data for Idaho Fish and Game, or the muscle to go out and clear trails with the primitive tools that are required in wilderness areas, the crosscut saws and Pulaskis and rakes and shovels.
Mm-hmm. Just to correct one thing, the total wilderness is 88,000, but the portion in Idaho is much smaller. It's only about 15,000. And that's really the legislation we're looking toward. Now, when we were back in Washington, we did talk to the Montana representatives just to keep them abreast of what we're doing and what's going on. And maybe in the future, they would join in. It would be a total wilderness area. But right now, our effort and Phil's effort is just the portion that's in Idaho.
It's a challenge to get one state's congressional delegation behind anything that is a land management act. Getting both Idaho and Montana to act simultaneously is probably unlikely. They're on different trajectories. We do see a pathway forward for the Montana portion, but it'll probably be a year to 3 years down the road.
Well, tell us, give us details on your trip. You know, who did you talk to and what did you accomplish? Bob, why don't we put that question to you?
Yeah, we actually met with both senators and both of our representatives. I think it was, they were all good meetings. They had lots of good questions and some of the same questions that you're asking, you know, why is Idaho Forest Group supporting this? And we were able to go into the history that I've already explained. And so I think it was, we were well received, and I think we're just looking forward to making sure that they have all the information that they need so that they can, hopefully we would like to see a bill introduced by Senator Risch yet this year. And I'd say there's better than a 50-50 chance. I don't know what Phil thinks, but...
And so you do have to have basically a sponsor, and you think Senator Risch might be the one that would take that on?
Senator Risch seems very receptive to the idea. In fact, I went back about a year ago to Washington, D.C. at the time that the hearings were being held on the Boulder White Clouds Bill, which he was a sponsor of. And during that hearing, he spent a couple minutes at the end to extol the virtues of the Scotchman Peaks, saying it's the thing he'd like to work on next. So he's indicated a strong interest, and over time, he and his staff have met with us, and we're at a point, a tipping point, where soon we think he'll take action.
And will the rest of the delegation be on board, you think? It sounds like they're positive towards it.
We had positive reactions from the rest of the delegation. Uh-huh. We think that they will. They don't have to act in lockstep unison, but to actually move the bill through Congress beyond introduction takes more than just someone being okay with it. It takes someone like Senator Risch, who's interested in spending the time bringing about their form of consensus amongst themselves, just like the community needs to be on board. As a delegation, they'll be more likely to move forward if they're somewhat of a unified series of steps.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the other things we're fighting right now is the timetable. Time is running out at this congressional year. There's about, probably 30 days left in their calendar, even though there's 6 months left in the year. But so everybody's anxious to go home and start campaigning for the election. So timing is running out. Not to say that this is something that couldn't certainly happen in the next session, but we are kind of limited.
Since most of the proposed area is actually in Montana, and it sounds like that Idaho might get a bill just for the Idaho portion, and is it important that the Montana representatives don't oppose it just because of the potential future impact on the Montana side?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know you don't like yes and no questions, because that doesn't fill a radio show, but yes, to be very clearly and emphatic, it's important that senators not oppose it. And we've taken opportunities when we've been in D.C. and on this trip did as well to update them. And the general consensus from the Montana side is that a wilderness designation for Idaho won't hurt efforts in Montana. In fact, it will help them.
It's very interesting information. I have a bunch of more questions. I just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho, and this is the Wednesday edition of The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. We have our guests in the studio talking about Scotchman Peaks Wilderness Designation. They recently went to Washington, D.C. Bob Bay, Vice President, Idaho Forest Group. Carrie Kelly, Bonner County Commissioner Chair, and Phil Huff, Executive Director, Scotchman Peaks Wilderness Friends of. It's nice to have you here. One of the things that has come to mind is, you said there's no real opposition to this, but it does take time. And is it just a bureaucratic process that we're looking at mostly?
Congress moves very slowly. And yes, to anyone who's actually worked with Congress to try to get something done.
Actually, anybody who reads the newspaper.
Yeah, anybody who reads the newspaper. When you really delve into it, though, the founders created our system to act slowly. They wanted laws to be made very deliberately so that good laws would be passed. And we could have a long discussion over good laws versus bad laws, but it was designed to be a slow, deliberate system. And the advantage of that is that once Congress does act to declare the area a wilderness, it will act even more slowly to undo it. Mm-hmm.
So are there other areas that have been designated wilderness recently, and do you use their process as a template for your process?
I'm going to take part of that answer, but I'm going to have Bob speak a little bit to it. There have been other fairly recent wilderness areas, and their situations are different, and there's a tendency towards work on some large landscapes and appearance of wilderness in bills that have things that have nothing to do with wilderness, is some form of compromise. But in the end, we believe the more powerful statement is building public support around the singular idea of wilderness without having to bring in competing interests. And we think that the work we're doing here demonstrates that that can be done, and we hope that it actually sets up a model for a better way of creating wilderness areas.
Yeah, and I think Senator Risch is uniquely qualified to implement this Scotchman Peak Wilderness, because the roadless rule, when he was governor, he got implemented for the state, all of the roadless lands, a management plan for those areas. And so this is consistent with his vision back then. So now it's just implementing what he's already been a part of. And I think that's a plus for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While we have you, I had another issue I was going to ask about, but any more words on the status or what's happening with the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness?
I think, as Kerry pointed out, the time frame is very short for Congress this year. They will take their in-state work period fairly soon, and then a short time back in D.C. before the fall elections. There's a possibility they'll go into a lame duck at this point. There's no promise of that, and so if we see an introduction and activity is likely to be in the fall. But if it doesn't happen in this session, when they pick up the new session of Congress in January and start work again, we're hopeful that Senator Risch will do something at that time.
And if it gets introduced in fall, is there a pretty good chance that the Congress would take it up and vote on it? It has to go through committee first.
It has to go through a committee hearing first. But things can happen very quickly. Elections have a way of either slowing things down, or once they're done, then speeding things up as Congress looks at a transitionary period when they think that it's important they get something done before that change.
Okay.
And there has been omnibus legislation where they would take a number of areas where there is general consensus, like the Scotchman, and there could be an omnibus lands bill passed late in the year, and that's what we're hopefully setting the stage for.
So the Scotchman could be included in a much larger bill that's dealing with a lot of lands.
Yeah. It would be one part then of a much larger bill that would settle a number of questions.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you've formed a, as you say, broad coalition of support for Scotchman Peaks to become wilderness designated, and that might be a good template for the federal government, actually.
Well, we do hope, and I'd like to say that I see this work as important not only to demonstrating how wilderness can be done, but really about how communities can address challenges, problems, solutions, and the model can be exported beyond wilderness to a lot of questions our community faces.
And the Scotchman Peaks, Friends of Scotchman Peaks, have been working on this for 11 years now, but in the scale of things, that's a pretty fast turnaround time to conceive an idea that we want to push for wilderness and to actually have it come up for consideration.
And to be fair, there were advocates, particularly in Montana, who were working on the question of wilderness for the Scotchman's Peaks all the way back into the 1970s. So we're building on work that was the foundation of which was laid decades ago.
Yeah, and the Forest Service actually recognized the wilderness values by keeping it a roadless area in their management.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Well, we thank you very much for coming in and filling us in on that. And we wanted to grab the opportunity while we have the chairman of the Bonner County Commissioners here to ask about a kind of a related question on timber. It was in the news last week that the timberland assessments were going to be rolled back because of some questions that had been raised, I believe, at the state level about how the appraised values were being increased this year. And I thought, Kerry Kelly, our commission chair, you could fill us in on what's happening there.
Well, what has happened is there were conversations with the state assessor's office on timber going back to last November with our assessor's office. And there was kind of a consensus that timber values were a little bit on the low side in Bonner County. And there were several discussions that went back and forth between the assessor's office and the state tax assessors. Well, what happened without many people knowing about it, like the commissioners, through the months, the category of timber was upgraded in Bonner County to the highest value that it could be. And it was, I think, rather arbitrarily done without laying the necessary groundwork of looking how to introduce increased assessments, how to go out and have field studies to find out what the soil content was and so forth. But anyway, what happened was they assessed all timberland at the highest rating and the assessments went out. And commissioners didn't know anything about it until about 2 weeks ago. We saw an ad in the Daily Bee. Some of the citizen put an ad in there saying the state was making a big land grab and increasing everybody's taxes. So that same day, I called Bob Bay to find out what's going on, how you rated timberland and so forth and so on, and got an education from him. But all in all, once we looked at it, we realized that the best thing to do is roll it back, And we did that the first day of Board of Equalization, which is 9 days that we have this month, looking at tax appeals, so that the assessor's office in the state can take a good methodical look at it, assess the land, see what needs to be done, and come up with a plan. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. It was just, I think it was a little preemptive. Just need a little more time for rational study.
Yeah, and the land is taxed based on its ability to produce timber. So that's why they have the low, the medium, and the high. So to just arbitrarily say everything is the high class is not mm-hmm. a good decision. Mm-hmm. So we're glad that the commissioner stepped in, and it needs to be based on the productivity potential of the land.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there has been a lot of study that went into that when they initially established the low, medium, and high. So, you know, unless something has changed, unless the land has become more productive, probably the rates that are established are the fair rates. And we'll look forward to working with the assessor and the county commissioners to make sure that everything is established the way it should be.
Bob, do you know how many acres of timberland Idaho Forest Group has in Bonner County? Or?
Not specifically in the county. I'm guessing probably 10,000 acres.
Okay.
We own about 50,000 acres total in northeast Washington, northern Idaho, mm-hmm. and western Montana.
Mm-hmm.
So we're familiar with the forest taxation. It's a little bit done differently mm-hmm. in the different states, but we mm-hmm. follow it closely.
And, of course, this affected even small landowners, that anybody with a timber exemption on their property.
That's right. Anybody with a timber exemption, when you have your assessment, your assessment notice, you will probably find that your timber portion went up somewhat, and all those are going to be rolled back without any action on your part. Mm-hmm. So that will be done automatically.
Okay. Well, thanks for that update. And again, thank you, Commissioner Bonner County Commissioner Kerry Kelly, Bob Bay with Idaho Forest Group, and Phil Huff with the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness for coming in today.
And I just want to say, it sounds like through all the hard work and this great coalition and diverse groups that love Scotchman area, it sounds like there's going to be a party within a year or two.
We'll have a really big party.
I know. We should start planning now.
Yeah, and I've hiked up to the top with Phil, so we're going to have a very nice celebration somewhere.
Yeah, sounds.
The county has a planned trip up there one October with Phil as our leader.
Yeah. All right. Well, good work, everyone. Thank you so much for coming in, Bob Bay, Phil Huff, and Kerry Kelly.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Susie.
Yeah.
Thanks.
We're going to put on a song, and this is Earl Scruggs and Lester Flatt. It's called Foggy Mountain Breakdown. But we just want to remind you, we'll be right back. Gene Girth from 350sandpoint.org will be here to give us an update on that organization. We'll be right back. And that was Foggy Mountain Breakdown with Lester Flatts and Earl Scruggs. I think that's how you say it, right, Gene?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're back in the studios. This is 88.5 KRFY, and this is the morning show with Chris and Susie. And we have a new guest in the studio. It's Jean Girth. She's from 350sandpoint.org. There's a lot of questions to be asked, but thanks for joining us this morning. Yeah.
Good morning. Yeah.
And I'm the question asker.
And Chris, what are you going
to
ask?
You just pointed at me, Susie, to ask a question. Well, Jean, let's start at the top. What is 350sandpoint.org?
We are the local chapter of 350.org, which is a good website to go to find out more information. But 350.org was started by Bill McKibben, who's a climate activist. And 350 stands for the parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that scientists deem as sustainable for a healthy climate. We're above 400. Now. And so 350.org is a global organization who's, they had a march in New York City that was like, I don't know, 10 million people. This was two or three years ago. And then they organized demonstrations around the signing of the climate change accord through the UN, which had, I think, thousands of demonstrations last September, October.
We actually had one here in Sandpoint, and that was the
mm-hmm. reason for starting 350 Sandpoint was because I wanted a local demonstration. So 350 helps local organizations get started, and the mission being to build resilient local communities to deal with climate change issues. 350 is a little bit more, the global organization is a little bit more, maybe a little narrower focus, because they talk about their 3 points of keeping fossil fuel in the ground, divesting from oil and gas stocks in portfolios, and the third one will come to me sometime soon.
Is it supporting renewable energy?
It probably is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is.
That initiative.
Developing renewable energy. So 350sandpoint.org certainly takes on all of those goals, and I see it as a gathering tent. We're a tent for people to come in Sandpoint, because there's so much going on in Sandpoint that is relevant to climate change issues. But I wanted to have an organization where that was the primary focus, because a lot of these other organizations have just a more narrow focus, like Scotchman Peak Wilderness is great, but it's mm-hmm. not addressing all of the issues that we need to address. Mm-hmm. And this is going to, we're in it for the long haul. Mm-hmm.
And you know, to play off that, to keep the forest intact within the Scotchman Peak area, that actually is good for the climate issues that we're having, right?
Right. We need to protect our water sources. We need to protect our trees to keep cleaning our air out. And it's such a complicated, it needs to be addressed from very many different angles. So I hope 350 Sandpoint can become a place where if somebody came into town and they Googled climate change Sandpoint, it would point to us. And then from there, they could see all the different organizations that are working on things. I'd say that one of our unique contributions that I want to pursue is really in the political realm, so we can hold our public officials accountable to generating some good legislation, good policies around the climate change issue. And we are not a 501(c), and I never intend to be a 501(c), because I want to do more political action, and I don't want to get mired in the having boards and
because
fundraising.
501(c)(3)s can't advocate on political.
They can to a limited extent,
but it's
pretty tricky mm-hmm. to do. And I also don't want to compete with anybody else in town. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be another organization looking for funding from the same mm-hmm. limited resources that we mm-hmm. have.
So how many people do you have involved right now?
Well, we have a mailing list of about 50.
Mm-hmm.
So on Saturday, I'm looking to double that. And I'm asking everybody who is already part of 350 Sandpoint to bring somebody to City Beach at 9 o'clock. We're going to meet near the gazebo. I did not rent the gazebo, so hopefully you might have to bring your umbrella too. But we're going to meet at City Beach. We'll have information. The reason for the timing of this is that this is Stop the Oil Trains Week, and today is actually the anniversary of that terrible disaster in Quebec that killed 40 plus people, from an explosion of an oil train. Mm-hmm. And we've certainly had more recent evidence of that on the Columbia River, that the oil trains aren't safe. So Wild Idaho Rising Tide is one of the organizations that's kind of spearheading that movement in this area. So they will be there. We'll have information about what's going on in terms of stopping the oil trains.
Mm-hmm. And one way we're impacted here, of course, we're talking about a global issue.
Right.
So it's a huge issue. And I want to dig into the question of what can local governments or local people do. But one way we do see an impact here, besides the effects of climate change that we're feeling, and some people would argue these these unusual weather events we're getting around here are a result of that, possibly. But we see a lot more transport of not just oil, but as well coal on these trains that are coming through Sandpoint.
And we're the bottleneck.
Yeah. We're actually called the funnel.
Because, the funnel, right.
Because the northern tier train lines all come through Sandpoint.
Right.
So we see already a high train traffic, but we're seeing an even an increase with these coal and oil trains.
Right. And it's so, in addition to the safety issues, the fact that we're still building infrastructure to take more fossil fuel out of the ground so that we can burn it, so that we have more carbon dioxide. There's already enough fossil, I think I'm right on this, there's enough fossil fuel that's already been identified and we have the infrastructure for that. If we burned all of that, we're not going to be around anymore. So it just doesn't make sense. But I know our system, it's hard to stop things like that.
It sounds like 350sandpoint.org is an organization that is like an umbrella. You said a tent, but an umbrella that kind of any group that is wants to do activities such as Wild Idaho Rising Tide or the Idaho Conservation League, both have been working on the oil train, coal train issue for both reasons, the safety issue and more infrastructure for bringing fossil fuel out of the ground. And also information. I think when you talk about citizens becoming aware, there's got to be a place where you can go and find out, well, what does it mean? What does 350 mean? And we just heard what that means. It's the parts per million of carbon that we can sustain this planet. And we're already past that. Is it the hope of 350 and all of us, basically, or can we bring it down back to 350? We don't know, but at least we have to try.
We got to do our best, and if nothing else, we're going to have to adapt. So that's one of the ways to look at this, too, is what are we going to do? You know, how are we going to be prepared for the changes that are coming? And the science says that, you know, we're already in it, and we're not going to stop it at this point, but hopefully we can slow it down and then start reversing it. And there's, I guess that's another one of the aims of the website we have, which is 350sandpoint.org, is to just steer people towards some of the resources that we've found that have been really helpful. And so like Gary Payton has a blog on our site where he can show us some of the resources he's found. And because it's science, there's a lot of science out there and we need to be familiar with it so we can make good decisions down the road.
Mm-hmm. So historically, that is prior to the Industrial Revolution, our parts per million were about 275 parts per million of carbon dioxide. So we've already come up over 10 or 15% higher than it has been historically.
Yeah, more than that, I guess.
Over
400.
Right, yeah, so well more than that. So is the goal to get us back down to 350? And is that even achievable? You do hear some opponents of doing anything about this say, kind of basically throwing their hands up and saying, well, we can't really affect it now. It's going to, let the runaway freight train go where it goes. But you believe that we can take mindful action.
Truthfully, I don't know the science well enough to say whether I think we can get it down below 350. But clearly, I think the UN agreement was to try to keep it at 400 or 450. And that they talked about that a lot, and they set one level, but then they said where we really need to be is lower than 450. So, I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows, although there's certainly scientists that have better guesses about that than I do, but or better facts. But what do you do? I mean, we're going to have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And no, we may never solve it. But I think that's why. I think it's one of the issues why it's so difficult to get people rallied around this, mm-hmm. because it is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we need to do is to hang out with each other and support each other in that.
remind our listeners that this is the 88.5 KRFY morning show with Chris and Susie, and we're talking right now with Jean Girth. She's the one of the organizers for 350sandpoint.org, which is attacking the issue of climate change on a local basis. So let's explore the question of local. What can our local government, what practical actions would you like to see our local governments take, Jean?
I think, Chris, you need to come to our gathering on Saturday so we can talk about this and brainstorm. I mean, one step that needs to be taken is a more thorough study of what's going to happen in Sandpoint with our best projections about the weather. And clearly, last summer was a crisis for a lot of people with the fires. I'm sure that there's a lot of stuff going on. I know we have great people in our government who are planning for this, but as far as a coordinated plan and looking at the long-term impacts, what it does, you know, the people who get most affected by all of this are the ones with the least resources. And that's also been one of the focus that I think we need to keep is helping people who don't have the resources to rebuild, who don't have the resources to, you know, people joke about moving to Canada. Well, great, but that doesn't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do for water sources? I knew quite a few people last year whose wells went dry, and they had set up stations at the fairgrounds to so people could come fill their buckets of water.
Well, there's just less groundwater going around because it's such a dry summer.
That's what I assume. So what do we do about that? So that's the kind of plan. That's one thing I think local governments need to address is to plan for events.
It sounds like having information brings awareness. Awareness brings planning, comprehensive planning for all citizens of your own area. And then the global issue becomes the global issue that we all become a part of as we become educated. Mm-hmm. And I like the thought of renewable energy. The more I hear about it, I just hope that that is the trend that we move towards more and more and more. I think the science says it's possible. It takes time, but it takes starting someplace.
Right.
Here in our own community, we have an organization, 350sandpoint.org, that is a clearinghouse for information and gathering of people.
And I would really love to have just a huge mailing list, even if people can only come out once a year. But at some point, it's really important, I think, for people to show up and be on the streets and make this message loud and clear to everybody. And that takes some organizing ahead of time to do.
Well, tell us again about the event.
So Saturday at City Beach in Sandpoint near the gazebo. It's low-key, bring your own coffee. We'll have information there. Look for a banner. We have a logo, so look for our banner of 350sandpoint.org, and we'll network.
And what time again? I'm sorry.
Oh, 9 o'clock.
9 a.m.
9 a.m. on Saturday.
And bring what?
Anything you want to eat.
And the goal is to kick off a conversation and ideas and brainstorming.
Yes, get people together so they get to know each other, because we're going to need all of those interconnections and resources and relationships to be effective in this. Mm-hmm. That's our aim.
Good job. Good work there. And that was Jean Girth. Thank you so much
Thank
for coming
you.
In, Jean, from 350sandpoint.org. There'll be a gathering at the City Beach gazebo area on Saturday at 9 o'clock. Bring your friends.
Fill this in. There is a website. It's 350sandpoint.org, and people can go there and get information about what the group is trying to accomplish.
And also, I need real quickly on while the Stop Oil Trains movement is having a workshop at the East Bonner County Library the same day at 3 p.m. So you could get even more information about what's going on with that.
Okay.
Well, thank you again. And we're going to go to a song real quick. We'll be back with the community calendar and events and things that are going on. This is a little short song. It's the Beatles' Paperback Writer. It was the number one song on this day 50 years ago. We'll be right back. And that was the Beatles' Paperback Writer. It was the number one song on the Billboard charts 50 years ago today in 1966. And we're back in the studio. This is the morning show with Chris and Susie at 88.5 KRFY Community Radio. And so now is the time, Chris, when we talk about what's going on in town. And as you said earlier, there's plenty.
Yeah, there's a ton going on. We're not going to be able to cover everything for sure, but we do have a great community calendar at carolfy.org. It's provided by sandpointonline.com. It has details on everything we're going to be talking about. One of the big events of the year coming up is the Wooden Boat Show, also known as the Antique and Classic Boat Show. That's Friday through Sunday. Probably the biggest events are Saturday, and you can cruise along the Sand Creek Boardwalk and see all these classic wood boats from the 40s and 50s and right about that era. So that's a great one to catch. As well, on Saturday, there's an event called the Sandpoint Beer Fest. That's happening from noon to 5 p.m. It's going to be at Trinity at City Beach. It's put on by the Greater Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce. And there are going to be 20 different local craft brewers there. And fun, games, music, food, music by Still Tipsy and the Hangovers. That sounds like a appropriate name for a beer fest band, huh, Susie?
I think so.
And then there's another big event happening this weekend. Actually, there's more than one. The Sandpoint Summer Fest is happening Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's an annual event put on by the Eureka Institute in Sale. It's a family music festival, so all the kids are invited. There's arts and culture. There's performers of different types, but the main thing is the music. They have a ton of different bands playing all 3 days. You can see more about them at their website. I think it's sandpointsummerfest.com.
Yeah, that's put on by the Eureka Institute. I think you just said that.
Yes.
But it is a big family event. It's 3 days, and website is Summerfest?
Sandpoint Summerfest, I believe. Okay. But if you type in Sandpoint Summerfest into Google, you'll find it, or you can link to it from our community calendars at KRFY.org. Another pretty significant event happening this weekend on Saturday is the Rails to Resort Hill Climb. It's a bike race that starts at the bottom of Schweitzer at the barn there, and then finishes up at the main lot at Schweitzer Mountain Resort. That's a pretty healthy climb for a bicyclist, and actually it's become very popular. So if you're a bicyclist and you're up for a challenge and you'd like to do the ride, that's this Saturday as well.
And on Sunday, it's JC's Race. That's July 10th. This is it's been doing this for quite a while. I don't know which year this is, but starting at 7 o'clock at the high school, you can pick up and register race packets between 7 and 8. At 7:30 to 10:30, they'll have an expo and silent auction. 8:30 sharp is the 5K kilometer race. And at 9:15 sharp, 1 kilometer race. And at 9:45, awards and all kinds of fun things. That's JC's Race. You can find out more information by visiting JC's. That's JACEYS-RACE.com.
And that raises money for cancer or children facing life-threatening illnesses.
And we're fresh out of time.
We're just about out of time. I wanted to mention we're next Wednesday on the morning show. On our morning show, we're going to have in Kim Woodruff. We're going to be talking about the Sandpoint City Parks. We have a terrific park system here, but there's lots of interesting issues that are available for us to talk about, including one of my questions at the moment is geese at City Beach. They're taking over parts of the beach, and
it's an issue.
It's a big one right there.
Well, okay.
Geese at City Beach, but there are a lot of other things going on. Of course,
sure.
the Memorial Field Stadium is being rebuilt. There's the cities involved in the Watercrest, the Watershed Crest Trail. So it's a lot of exciting things happening.
So we'll have Kim Woodruff in from the Parks and Recs of Sandpoint City. We're going to say goodbye. We want to remind you tomorrow morning you can join Jack Peterson for the morning show at 8. And this is Gene Vincent's Bebop Alua. It's the song that the John John Lennon and Paul McCartney first met on this date in 1957, and this is one of the songs they played. But this is Gene Vincent's version of his very own song, Bebopalooa.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye. Have a good week.